Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Radio for the Liberties talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio for the Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. So we are back in Kyrgyzstan, the country which has been in the spotlight for so many reasons for the past so many months. And today we have one potentially good but many negative developments that we will be talking about. The good news is, in apparent response to the growing demand by the international rights organizations, the court in Kyrgyzstan had a ruling about the journalist Azimjan Askarov's case, who died a year ago in a police custody. So this ruling kind of opens the door for the possibility of resumption of an investigation into the cause of his death. But the bad news is, among many other negative trends, an approval in the parliament of a controversial bill this week that activists say could stifle free speech in the country. So these are two among many other developments that we will be talking about today. And to do so, I'm joined by Senat Sultanaliyeva, Human Rights Watch researcher focusing on Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. Senat is joining us from Bishkek. Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. So another guest who is currently on a visit to Uzbekistan could not get into the show because of the internet connection there. So we have a very compact panel today. So thank you, colleagues, for making the time for this important conversation. So let's start with a decision by the court about the possibility of resumption of the investigation into Askarov's death. I guess it's a positive development, isn't it, Sainat?
Yes, it is a positive development, but I would correct you there a little bit because it is a little bit confusing with the courts here in Kyrgyzstan. It's not exactly a court decision to resume the investigation. It's a Bishkek city court, and it has overturned the decision of a district court, which had previously, in the beginning of July, had sort of denied the appeal of Birdino. It's the local human rights organization that has been working tirelessly for Askarov's case, and now he's representing legally his widow, Khadija Askarova.
Right.
So they had appealed the decision to stop the pretrial investigation, as they call it, into the death in custody of Askarov. So what Birdino had done is they wanted to appeal the decision by the prison service to stop this investigation. And the courts, the district court in Bishkek, on 1st of July had found their appeal to have been submitted too late, or, you know, apparently there were some regulatory problems with that. So Birdino appealed this decision. And now what we have is that the Bishkek City Court has supported their appeal. So we're not exactly resuming the investigation, but there is a chance that the investigation might be resumed. But Birdina still has a way to go in that sense.
So what comes next after this ruling?
After this ruling, from what we understand, is that the Bishkek City Court probably will be considering the appeal by Birdina, in which they have been contesting the legitimacy of the decision by the prison service to stop the pretrial investigation. So the hope that is, if the Bishkek City Court decides to support Birdino's appeal content-wise or conceptually, then we have a chance that the investigation will be resumed and it will be further on transferred into the other services. I'm guessing that it could be either the prosecutor's office or the state security, the GKNB in Kyrgyzstan, but definitely not the prison service.
I understood that decision is going to mean a resumption of this investigation that was very controversial by many people. Let me be cautious here now. In case of this investigation resumes, so they will be trying to find out how he died in police custody, or what will be the focus?
Yes, exactly. I'm guessing that what will be happening is that they will be looking into the circumstances of his death. And as we had mentioned in our statement condemning this decision to stop the pretrial investigation, that yes, Askarov may have died from the complications that are COVID-19 related, but what really killed him is the 10 years of unjust imprisonment and mistreatment, ill treatment in prison, and also denial of medical services to him throughout those years, because his health had been deteriorating progressively over those years. So I'm guessing that is the main sort of reason for this investigation, or like that is the main hope for this independent investigation, that there will be justice for that.
Well, okay, so we are not talking about the stats or the removal of the charges that he was initially blamed for. Like, what was that? The charges that he might play the role in inciting inter-ethnic clashes in Osh a couple of years ago. So which was anyway considered to be bogus by many human rights organizations in the first place. So the investigation will not go to that area.
Not in this specific case. And I'm not sure. I wish that a representative from Birdino could have joined us here. But from what I understand is that they're currently working on this case and then also on representing Khadija Askarova in her struggle to be recognized as a legal representative, or is it as somebody who's carrying the legacy, right? It's the legal term of Askarov to be recognized in that sense. So these are the two cases that Birdino are working on. And as for overturning the actual court decision that had Askarov imprisoned for the 10 years that he was, I don't think there is any appeal in that case because the Supreme Court of Kyrgyzstan had ruled in 2020, like they have not changed their decision, they have not changed the sentence for him in that sense. Mm-hmm. Even though there has been the 2016 ruling by the UN Human Rights Committee that it was a wrongful imprisonment and that he should be released and should be compensated for this and he should be legally rehabilitated, but the Kyrgyz courts all the way up to the Supreme Court have ignored this decision.
You know, also just to mention that, you know, this is all happening in the first anniversary of his death in the police custody. And also, the ruling by the court came in the aftermath of the demand by a coalition of human rights organizations, like Human Rights Watch was also a party to that. It looks like there's a connection between international demand and the decision by the court. Or am I kind of exaggerating that?
That is the cautious hope, I would say. I think on our part, definitely, and on the part of many other international organizations, also local organizations, I guess. I think it might be probably useful to remember here that a few months ago, President Japarov had mentioned or had ordered reconsideration of all the court hearings and investigations relating to the June 2010 events. We have not heard much about that since then, and it was also not very clear what exactly they would be looking at, but that also sort of opened doors for the possibility that maybe there will be some political will to reconsider and to possibly posthumously legally rehabilitate Askarov and, you know, respect the 2016 UN ruling.
Mm-hmm. I guess, Bruce, you already have a lot to say, a lot to contribute here. And please jump in. And there are a couple of things I have in mind to ask you. One is, from your perspective, what's the rationale behind what we are talking about today in terms of this court ruling? What Kyrgyz authorities are trying to do? What could be the rationale behind the decision in a bigger picture?
Kyrgyz politics is so complicated. It's getting more complicated all the time. You know, I've been thinking about why all of a sudden we had the court decision from the other day that Sanat was talking about. You know, that basically overturns the decision to stop the investigation so that now they can possibly restart the investigation. There's still some procedures to go through. But, you know, when Japarov and his government came in, you know, everyone kind of branded them as like Kyrgyz nationalists, you know. So you would think that someone like Azimjan Askarov, who was an ethnic Uzbek, this would be way down on their priority list. And even if it did come up, that this would not be something that you would figure would result in a different decision than earlier decisions made by the Kyrgyz courts. That said, first of all, if they did decide to open the investigation and declare it a wrongful death, then obviously you score some points with the international rights community and Western governments too. And the Kyrgyz government needs some victories, that's for sure. You know, they're not well viewed by many governments, and not just democratic governments, but, you know, even Russian government and others are not real sure about these guys. But, you know, what Japarov's government has shown that they're willing to do is go after people that they thought were their enemies. Japarov is connected with the Bakiyev regime, of course. And so everything that happened after Bakiyev until Japarov showed up, you know, anyone who was an official or any decision that was made in those 10 years is all of a sudden up for review or possible reversal or something like that, you know. And again, Japarov's government has shown that they're willing to go after people that were prominent politicians, you know, from 2010 to 2020, but were perceived as their enemies somehow or another, you know. So they got a long line of officials that are being brought in for questioning and detained. And you have to wonder, like I said, one, it's an easy victory for the Japarov government to say, okay, we're going to review this case and everything like that. But at the same time, who is going to be held responsible for the decisions that led to Askarov being jailed and not receiving proper treatment and, you know, things like that? You kind of got to wonder if there's not other motives at work in this. You know, I'd like to take it at face value and think that, oh, this is great. They're finally going to try to get some kind of justice out here and review this whole thing. But I think it's mixed in with other aspects of Kyrgyz domestic politics at the moment.
Very interesting. So this ruling, the court ruling in Kyrgyzstan, which might might open a door about the possibility of resuming the investigation into the Askarov's death. In case, I'm very cautious now here, in case if this investigation resumes, where you will be looking at, Bruce, in terms of the investigation, the direction of it?
You know, this is obviously this is an investigation, you know, ultimately about conditions in the prison system. They're going to have to look and see, did he get adequate care? You know, what was the review process? I mean, and a lot of people were calling to let him go, you know, last year when we had the COVID outbreak, when it first started, saying, look, this is an old guy. You know, he's in prison. He's not going to last long. He's had health conditions already. Why don't you just let him out, you know, on compassionate grounds? What happened to that? Why wasn't that reviewed properly? Or was there a mistake in reviewing it somewhere? And like I said, ultimately, did he get proper medical treatment? And the answer seems to be no. And so why did that happen? You know, so again, like I said, this is, you know, they can get people they don't want out of the penitentiary system, right? And remember, you know, Japarov himself was in prison until last October. So, you know, maybe he, some people that he didn't like, you know, that he thought didn't treat him the way that he felt he should have been treated or something. So you do this review of Askarov's prison conditions and then find out that the people that Japarov doesn't like when he was in prison are the people responsible for Askarov suffering when he was in prison. So you watch that. But, you know, I mean, it should at least lead to some reforms in the penitentiary system, you know, especially in terms of who gets medical treatment. I mean, this was an old man. And as Sanat said, he'd had health problems for many, many years, you know, and so it looked so bad. I mean, he died last July, and there was calls all the way from, you know, March until he died from international rights groups and individual governments saying, let him out. There's no purpose in keeping him in prison except that you're running the risk that he's going to get COVID and compounded with his pre-existing medical conditions, he'll die. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
It looked really bad.
Yeah. You know, we have contacted the organization, Birdinu, that earlier Sanat was mentioning, but they could not join us in this conversation. Hopefully we will have them in the future to talk more into the details of what they are really appealing and how the process is going in their absence. And Sanat, one more thought about this ruling about Askarov's case. Your organization was party to the demand that international organizations have just released. So where you will be looking at going forward after this stage, of course, this is just a ruling and there is a process to be followed. So in case situation come to this point in which the investigations resumes, so where your eyes will be?
I think that Bruce had actually a really good sort of like overview of the areas that would be needed to be looked at. And specifically, exactly as Bruce had mentioned, that there seems to be some indicators that Askarov didn't receive adequate medical support, even in July, because all the way, as we mentioned in one of the press releases, all the way to 24th of July, that's basically a day before he died, a press secretary of the prison service had claimed that Askarov was in good health.
Yeah.
So what were the grounds for, you know, the press secretary to make this kind of statements when, you know, Askarov's lawyer had seen for quite a few weeks that he was weak, that he couldn't talk, he had lost his appetite, he had lost weight, he had been suffering from fever and temperature, high temperature in general, and he had not been receiving any kind of medical support or any kind of medical care and treatment on the part of the prison service. And then all of a sudden on the, you know, like on the evening of the 24th or the 25th, he gets transferred to another prison, basically, which has a medical facility. And that was also in itself, it was from the statements by experts that Birdina had consulted, was also a bad decision, because Askarov was already not in a good health or in any kind of a condition to be transferred, you know, to survive this kind of a transfer from one prison to another. And it was a long way. So there was this sort of like a chain of actions, chain of decisions that were made by people in prison in which Askarov was held for these years that led to sort of like, you know, like they compounded one on top of the other and led to the tragic death. So all of these, like the actual circumstances, they really need to be clarified. In addition to, of course, because that's the thing that, you know, the very not independent investigation that was conducted by the prison service itself. And that's the main sort of problem with this investigation, right? First of all, it's taken something like 10 months, I think, to complete. And it was conducted only by the prison service, which is absurd that the prison service investigator would be looking into what the prison service had done wrong. You know, we already see there is a conflict of interests, you know, at the very least. But in addition to the conflict of interest, we see that they have really not looked into all of these details, all of these circumstances, you know, like the compounded details, right, that led to Askarov's death. So in the conclusion that the investigator has submitted to Pirdino and which had been supported by the, you know, the court, they're just saying that, you know, Askarov died from COVID-19 related complications and there was nothing that could be done. And furthermore, they actually claimed that the prison service had been attempting to provide him with medical support. And instead, Askarov was, you know, like insisting on not getting any kind of treatment, which is also such an absurd claim to make. You know, if you are somebody who is dying and who is, you know, like in a very bad condition, you don't do this. And even, okay, let's just be improbable and say, yes, okay, Askarov had been doing that. Mm. Let's imagine that. Prison service had the responsibility to still take it into their hands and to, you know, provide him with all the medical care and treatment that he had a right to as a curious citizen.
Yeah, it's a very painful and complicated situation that we are describing today. In the light of what you just has said, Senat, what kind of investigation is going to satisfy you guys, I mean, the rights activists or their family?
There would definitely be an independent investigation. And by independent investigation, well, we, of course, don't mean that it has to be an international investigation or something else, but it has to be an investigation that is conducted definitely not by the prison service. Right, according to the legislative sort of regulations, it has to go upwards. It has to go into the, you know, the general prosecutor's office. So an independent investigation by the prosecutor's office is the start that we're looking at. Okay. And the investigation would be looking into the actions of the prison service leading up to the tragic death of Askarov.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I don't want to stray too much, but if you put this in some perspective with recent events, right? Now, Omar Bekbabanov, and I know the reason he was being held was totally different and actually convicted, but I mean, he was just allowed to leave prison to receive medical treatment outside the country.
Yeah.
So when you think about what happened to Azimjan Askarov, and then you look at what they just did with Babanov, you got to go, well, what? You know, just happened here.
It's ironic.
Let's just also remember cases of criminal authorities that would be released from prison also on health-related reasons, and they would be allowed to leave the country even. I'm remembering a criminal authority by the name of Batukayev, if I remember. It was like, you know, quite a few years ago. And then this became also a reason for another political drama in Kyrgyzstan, as per usual. But, you know, there are quite a few cases in which people would be let go from prison on compassionate grounds or on health-related grounds. Mm. But not for Askarov.
Wow, a lot to unpack. You brought this very relevant aspect here. And other than that, is there anything to say, maybe add into, before I move on to another very important developments that we have just seen this week in the Kyrgyz parliament about the media? We will get to it in a minute. But is there anything else to say when you look into the overall situation of human rights in Kyrgyzstan over the past few months or so? Is there anything else to add in terms of the general picture of how things are lately? Sainat, this is your area of expertise.
Yes, I mean, I know that we're going to be going into this other topic, but I guess maybe some of the things that really come to mind. But yes, 2021 has, even though it's only been, you know, 6 months, 7 months, right, of the year, it's already full of different kinds of events that have been happening. And I would see probably the roots of these are, you know, going back all the way to the October parliamentary elections and the October political crisis that we really see is still unfolding, and we still are dealing with its consequences, even though we have a new president, his very fast accession to power in January, and, you know, the related constitutional reforms in Kyrgyzstan, which have been ushering in this new found support on, you know, highest levels for traditional values, you know, for this very nationalistic rhetoric in the country. And in addition, while we have this on a public discourse level, there is this return to the nationalist and traditional values. But we also are seeing that when it comes to human rights of citizens, of individuals in the country, they're just being continued to be violated on so many levels. And I would say probably the case that I would really draw our attention to lately is the case of Orhan Inandi. For example, it's a dual Turkish-Kyrgyz citizen, as you probably aware of this case, like who we basically saw a rendition of him to Turkey, right? Where he was kidnapped and was forcefully returned to Turkey, even though he is a Kyrgyz citizen. I mean, he might be a dual Turkish citizen as well, but, you know, his Kyrgyz citizenship remains a fact. And instead of effectively investigating the situation, what we see, especially, you know, like in the beginning of July, after it was announced that Inanbi was transferred to Turkey, and apparently he was transferred quite soon after he was kidnapped, late May. So instead of investigating this, instead of requesting his return to Kyrgyzstan and defending him as a Kyrgyz citizen, what we see is that the Kyrgyz government is actually pursuing a different line of investigation, and that's basically investigating grounds on which he received his Kyrgyz citizenship and other actions like that, which are really indicating that the Kyrgyz government is not interested in protecting its citizens on an individual case. Or any kind of basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, very mixed picture indeed. And also, speaking of the mixed picture, the latest bill we just saw approved by the parliament on media, and experts already are alarmed by what it could mean for already a fragile media landscape in Kyrgyzstan. So let's switch our conversation to the bill itself and also what it could mean for the freedom of speech and what should we be looking at going ahead. So let's continue the conversation talking about this and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. Today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Senat Sultan Alibe, human rights researcher focusing on Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Free Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Free Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the development around the investigation into the death of journalist Azimjan Askarov in police custody and the possibility of the resumption of the investigation into the cause of his death, and also the new media bill in the parliament, in the Kyrgyz parliament. So talking about the media, we were hoping to have someone from the CPG today. It did not happen simply because that they could not join due to some internet issues there. About the media bill, please feel free to jump in. We have a very compact panel today. So anyone, Senat and Bruce, feel free to jump in whenever you want. The media bill, it kind of created lots of reactions. So we will get to the reaction a little bit later. But in terms of the bill, so what we are talking about here in terms of the content, Senat, have you had the chance to go through it? And Bruce, what about you?
From what we're seeing is that it's a law that's titled on protection from false and inaccurate information. And it's a bill that is very similar, or I would even say it's a repackaged draft law from last year, the scandalous draft law from last year, which is called manipulation of information draft that was vetoed by then President Sooronbay Jeenbekov in July 2020. And it was returned to Parliament for further work. And the problem right now is that even though it was returned for further work last year in July, Parliament, which I would like to note that it's a caretaker Parliament, as we insist in human rights, and I think many other international organizations also recognize this. That's going to be a little bit of a side note. What we mean by a caretaker parliament is it's important to remember that this parliament is to an extent illegitimate in the sense that their authority had expired by October last year when we had the parliamentary elections in Kyrgyzstan. And even though they were failed and there was, you know, this prolonged political crisis that sort of started and is still continuing from there, and it has been decided that the then parliament would continue working, but the idea that it would be a caretaker parliament, and so and as such their powers and their authorities must be limited, as opposed to what we're seeing today is that they're passing a humongous amount of draft laws almost every day. One thing, anecdotal evidence from I think yesterday or today indicates that the parliament had passed in one day something like 36 draft laws, which you, if you divide it by the number of working hours in a day, that's probably 15 minutes per one draft law for consideration, for, you know, for discussion, for voting, for everything. So that really indicates the overreach of the current parliament, right? So this is the caretaker parliament that is taking, going back to the draft law that was vetoed by then President Jeenbekov a year ago, missing all of the deadlines, you know, according to the parliamentary regulations, you know, after receiving a vetoed draft law, the parliament has a certain amount of time, but that's not exceeding from what, if I'm not mistaken, not exceeding 6 months. They're supposed to return to this draft law and to consider it anew, or, you know, develop it, modify it as per the comments from the presidential administration. They have not done so. It's been a year, and they're going back to this draft law in May. That was the first time, I think, that when they proposed this into the agenda for consideration by the parliament. And then it has been repackaged, so like some of the parts of this draft law had been changed according to the comments from last year.
Could we go into the details of some of those, the content that we are really talking about? I mean, I understand that there are so many questions about how the proceedings on this bill has been happening at the parliament, very, very questionable the way you put it. On the content side of this, I mean, many activists find it really controversial. Like, I know I was just looking into one article. They are talking about establishing something like a watchdog of some sort, which will investigate complaints about online content. You know, it looks like kind of scary, scary the way, from the outlook of it.
Right. Well, the gist of it all is that the first thing is that they're going to be requiring now all users of the internet within the Kyrgyz Republic to de-anonymize themselves. So people are going to be required to use their real names on their websites or on their social media as well. So they will be no longer allowed to use nicknames or, you know, pseudonyms or anything else. And also all the way to providing your email address. I might be reaching here, but almost also, you know, like your contact details or something like that, like your phone number or something like that. So that's the first thing. And that's with the goal of making sure that every person is responsible for whatever they're saying on the internet and social media.
I guess this is one of the articles in the ruling, I guess, that in fact orders internet providers registering their clients and provide officials all the related information about their clients should the court orders so. So I guess, you know, it sounds scary.
Exactly. And the other thing is, which is also a lot more worrying in that sense, is that this law, I was going to say draft law, but it's a law now, it allows for this sort of agency that they're planning to either develop, establish, or perhaps they're going to be providing the authorities of it to an already existing agency. From what I remember, they were planning to make the Minister of Culture and Information responsible for this. But so this basically, this agency would be responsible, would have the authority, would have the power to block websites without waiting for a court decision. If they decide that there has been, that this website carries false or inaccurate information.
Wow. Bruce, I'm sure you have a lot to say in this. I mean, I'm trying to put you in a very challenging position here. If you were to be a Kyrgyz journalist and sitting in Kyrgyzstan, Bruce, what would be going on through your mind?
Well, you know, how do you cover a range of stories? But let's say investigative. You're doing an investigative report or something, and you get three or four people that can, you know, somebody tells you something, and you get three or four other people to confirm that kind of information. Well, you know, if it's real controversial information or something like that, then you have the word of four or five people that you've talked to who might be real knowledgeable and, in fact, might be correct about what's going on. But you put that out, and all of a sudden you write that, post it, put it in a newspaper, say it on the radio, whatever. You know, and then it bothers some official or something like that, you know. And he thinks that he's being made a scapegoat or, you know, it portrays him in an unfavorable light or something like that. He says, this isn't true. You know, okay. A lot of things, you can't really prove them empirically, you know. So now you're in this very murky world of, you know, you have this, like you were talking about, this commission who's going to really subjectively decide if this is true or if it's false. I've seen these kind of expert commissions be formed before. They're usually expert linguistic commissions. And this has happened in Kyrgyzstan several times, too, where they listen to what someone says in a speech and then interpret what their intent was, you know. And so this is kind of in the same vein where they're going to say, yes, that's insulting, and it's also untrue, you know. And so you are not allowed to post information, or you are going to be fined a bunch of money that you cannot possibly pay, or something like that. I mean, but it's so subjective. in some of this stuff. You know, it's not like someone saying the sun won't come up tomorrow, and you can say, okay, well, that's false. You know, we waited until tomorrow. Here's the sun. You're wrong. Forget it. But you know, once you start insinuating or accusing people of misdoing, you know, corruption, something like that, and you can have all kinds of testimony, but it's only testimony. Like I said, it's not empirical. You can't prove a lot of that stuff. You can just, you hear that this is true, and everyone that works with this person might know that they're a crook. So you say, look, they're a crook, which is good for the whole country. You don't want these kind of people in government. But, you know, now you have all kinds of problems where you're going to get labeled as spreading fake news. And I thought, you know, Sinan made a good point. I know that we want to talk about the law itself. But, you know, this parliament was totally ridiculous. They just passed this, right, as has been noted. This was up for vote not a week or something ago. I can't remember, but it wasn't very long ago. And they had, like, deputies present, 59 voted for it, 37 or 38, I mean, voted against it. And then Japarov wanted to meet with the deputies over tea the other day. And all of a sudden they totally changed. You know, 97 voted for it and 5 voted against it after the tea with the president. You know, so, you know, it can be used by politicians in their own favor, especially the guy at the very top. And something strange just happened with the whole voting process, too. You know, I mean, it shot down and then all of a sudden it was overwhelmingly approved, you know, within just a few days difference.
Oh, just one point, though, on the commission, maybe Sinan, you have a better idea about this. Who are going to be the members of that commission?
This is very unclear. So this law doesn't really provide any information as to who would be, or like which exactly, you know, already existing department or agency or a ministry is going to be responsible for it. It's just, you know, hearsay that it might be a Ministry of Culture or anything at this stage. And it also doesn't really provide information as to who is going to be funding all this work. And you might remember, and Bruce might remember from, you know, the public discussions from the previous months, even the Ministry of Culture itself, which was rumored to be the agency that would be responsible for implementing this law, they had come out and said that we just don't have the money, we don't have the resources, we just don't have the people to do this. So in a sense, it's a draconian law, but it's also at the same time, it's unimplementable at this stage. So, and the problem with this and the absurdity of this is that it will be most likely used for specific cases or, like, you know, against specific journalists or against specific investigations. And one thing that really comes to mind here is that, you know, this whole saga with the independent investigation that was conducted by Klopp and Azatyk, you know, as part of the OCCPR, right, into the corruption by the family of former head of the customs in Kyrgyzstan, Matraimov. And, you know, despite having all this overwhelming evidence, not just witness statements or anything like that, but like actual documented information, the Kyrgyz government, you know, the law enforcement, the GKN, and all the other services, they just act like they weren't provided with this information. Or, as we remember, there have been some, you know, populist sort of these investigations last year in November, December, and I think all the way through January, when Matremi was even, you know, imprisoned, or, you know, arrested, detained. But they were all just sort of, you know, spectacle, a play put for the public to show that, yeah, we're listening to all these investigations, we're looking to, but you know what? We actually didn't find anything. So he just paid this funny fee, and he's now
out. Very, very interesting. I know we need to conclude the discussion very, very shortly. So maybe last point from you, Bruce. So the context in which this is taking place, is there anything stands out to you?
We've talked about the problems that this government was going to have, some of which, you know, are due to the nature of the government itself, but some of which are just unavoidable economic problems, healthcare system, things like that. You know, so they're open to a lot of criticism, you know, and I mean, the jury's still out. It's hard to, they don't look, seem to me like they're doing a very good job. But, you know, I've made the point before that anybody that was the head of the country in Kyrgyzstan would have a very difficult time with all the problems they got. But now that they have this law through, they have a way of stopping criticism real quickly. You know, if they feel like they're getting a lot of pressure, because let's face it, you know, I mean, criticism in Kyrgyzstan is something they got to take seriously. It's not like the governments in the other Central Asian countries. You know, the people start to get unhappy and get on, you know, Facebook and other social networks and put out bad information about you. You could be out of power real quick. But now they have a mechanism they can employ to stop it. You know, and like I said, there's going to be a lot of problems coming up, some of which are the creation of the government that's in right now, but a lot of them are just unavoidable, you know, economic problems, you know, food security, electricity, you know, things like that. And so now when that stuff pops up, anything, you know, if somebody starts saying, well, look, the government, it's just a scam by the government, then they can go right after these people, you know. You know, and like Sanat said, it makes it hard for, you know, media organizations to report on what's happening, because they're going to have to be afraid that if they criticize the government and the government's upset about it, that they're going to get this commission to come out, you know, whoever these people are who are going to be named as experts, and they're going to say, this is false information that you're spreading, you know, so you're off. You can't post anymore or whatever, or you're fined 10 million som, you know, which no anybody have something like that.
Thank you very much, Bruce. It was indeed a very insightful conversation today. Senat Sultan Aliyeva, human rights researcher focusing on Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan, thank you very much for joining us today. And also Bruce Panier, the editor of Freedom for the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi, thank you very much. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Ready for the Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C.